All right, welcome to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Podcast. This is episode 872? No, what is it? 279. Something like that.
Might as well be 872. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. How is everybody? I'm Kevin.
I'm great. I'm Gail Ann Hurd.
Not who that is.
I'm Daniel. I'm sick. And Simon and I have the same mic.
I'm Doug. I'm feeling fine. Just thought I'd share.
Intern and blind is a bat.
So, guys, I just want to say, I want to, before everybody out there in La La Land, I want to say thank you to Doug for allowing me to use his barbecue yesterday while he was doing errands.
What are the shipping charges to get it up here?
Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
Allowing me to use that barbecue. Number two. I've been reading a lot about this, and I know Kevin's probably already over it. Somebody went to see the Eternals movie and completely spoiled the after credits.
Ooh, now, they've actually completely spoiled the whole movie.
Oh, okay. Oh. I have not read anything, and Kevin knows I could not read anything because I would go ballistic.
Dodging them,
so
like
my
afterwards.
Question is, if you four had opportunity to read this article, if you did, would you read it?
No. No, not in a million years.
I read it.
Not out yet.
I read it. I know exactly what happens.
Oh, I know you would.
Yeah. I tend to feel that these Marvel movies are kind of unspoilable. I mean, they're nothing much like really happens. There isn't that much jeopardy to the heroes or anything, but nah, I would avoid it just to go in clean.
Yeah, I remember watching Iron Man 3, and I'm pretty sure someone on the online was like, "Hey, Tony Stark dies," and like the whole movie,
what?
Like, you, no, that's the thing. It's like for me, like if I read something before, I'm expecting it throughout the movie. It's like, oh, he lived through it. You know what I mean? Okay. So like, I would just not watch. I would not read it.
As you guys know, Dune just got released. I've read the Dune books. Read them all. Every one of them. Would not watch a Dune trailer. Now, am I not insane? I've read the books. It's not like something's going to magically surprise me. Nope. Wouldn't watch a trailer.
You've seen the original movie, right?
I've seen the original movie. I've read the books.
So is the original movie and this one sort of similar or no?
No.
Because I've never seen the original either.
You're not missing anything.
Well, I've seen the movie, but I can't tell you how if it's similar or not. Because that's another...
A friend of ours, yeah. Simon, has seen the first one, seen the second one. He says, well, I forgot what he said, but he said, like, it didn't... he's glad he saw the second one or something. I forget. It was
there's stuff in the first movie that doesn't happen in the first book.
Okay.
There's stuff that happens in the first movie that happened like book four. And I got really pissed off at the first movie because he was taking stuff for books that had nothing to do with his storyline. Because books threes and fours are thousands of years later than the original one.
What did he take from three and four in the Lynch?
The raining on the planet does not happen in the books till later. Mm-hmm. Well later, when his son becomes a giant sandworm.
Okay.
But I mean, that's
now the
not that anybody needs to know that.
The weirding modules, I believe, were a Lynch edition.
Yes.
Where they use sound as a weapon. Yeah.
Yes. Just stuff like that pissed me off, but just because I love the book so much, so that's why. When we get to our next episode and we discuss this movie, we'll get into it a little bit more. And I have a question here. Can I ask you guys for a favor? Since I've already seen Dune once, would it be okay if I watch Dune twice for the show?
Yeah, you can watch Dune as many times as you want.
Because I really want Dune on like 24/7 in my house, just so I can get everything out of it.
The new one or the old one?
Yeah, the new one.
I would say yes, but knowing you, you don't like to watch movies more than once, so...
Yeah, I think I might have to break my rule on this one.
You're so inclined. That means That means well, we already know it's number one. If I
just watch select scenes, that's not watching the movie. That's just watching select
scenes. So I'm guessing Simon's score for the new Dune will be somewhere above a 7.
Probably in the top of the digits. Yeah.
I think this
well,
will be
one of the... Well, you guys have it already, but I'm still working my way through Hellraiser films and 31 Days of Halloween. Now, you want to talk about a franchise that has some issues? Hellraiser.
Oh, God.
There's 10 films, and I'm on number 10 now.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I'm done. I have no other chit-chat for you guys. I'm ready to start the show. Listeners, this is what we do every week. We just don't, we honestly don't see each other a lot. I see Bob. I don't see Daniel, and Kevin's way too busy this time of year to even speak to.
That is a fair assessment.
And Doug, I don't see because I'm going to go over and I can, he's away so I can use his barbecue.
Yes.
They're like two crossing ships, only there when Doug is out running errands.
So I guess Simon's saying it's time to die.
It is. Ooh. Time to die.
Oh.
No Time to Die. Directed by Cary Joji Fukunaga. Screenplay by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, Cary Joji Fukunaga, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Starring Daniel Craig, Rami Malek, Leah Seydoux, Lashana Lynch, Ben Whishaw, Naomi Harris, Jeffrey Wright, Christoph Waltz, and Ralph Fiennes.
Indeed. Ooh, starting host.
Okay. I did not get to the theaters to see this.
Shut up, Kevin. We know you are.
You called me host. I'm the one hosting.
Which movie are we talking about?
Oh, Time to Die.
Bond.
James Bonding Time.
All right. So my take on this was interesting in that the Daniel Craig Bond movies have given us a full arc of the character from becoming an agent to the end of his career, in a sense, with this film. I was a little surprised that they went with the direction they did go with to make it so definite an ending. But there are things in the series that make me go back to some older theories that have been around forever. Anyway, but I'll get to that in a minute. The movie itself, I was entertained. I thought there were a lot of great action sequences, but I don't think it holds up all the way through to the end. I think the final battle at whatever his place is, the weird character played by Freddie Mercury.
Rami Malek?
Yes. I don't think he was as great. I think there was an indication that he may have been Dr. No or been Dr. No inspired. He was not a great villain for this film. The villain was really Spectre and the past. We pick up from the last film and daughter of Spectre, the girl that I can't remember the name, the actress's name.
Leah Seydoux.
Leah Seydoux's family. She's the daughter of Mr. White. Anyway, he for some reason she tells him she has to go to Vesper Lynn's grave, and he assumes that the assassination attempt that takes place there was her doing, when in fact it was his old brother setting it all up, Blofeld. And there are a lot of coincidences that she's now Blofeld's handler and working with the government, and there's now a new 007. I like certain aspects. The new 007 was a great idea, having someone else take over the number. And then we find out Bond is a father, which is something that has never happened in the series. He's gotten married before but never had children. And so it gives him something to fight for and something to die for in the end. So overall, again, I would say it's okay. It's not the best entry in the series, but it's a good one. And Craig is good in the performance, as is everybody else. When they started killing off people like Felix Leiter in the film, I thought there was something seriously wrong with it. I would love to see more of Ana de Armas's a character, because she's a real breath of fresh air for the 10 or 15 minutes that she's in the film. when he infiltrates Cuba. And that whole sequence has a very 60s Bond feel to it, you know, with Spectre and Blofeld's eye and the cat there and all that stuff. I thought that was a really fun sequence. But they kill everybody in Spectre just sort of to, I think, just to wrap it up neatly so there's nothing lingering around except for Blofeld. And then they kill Blofeld too. So it's like, I don't know. No, I think Daniel hasn't seen it, so he doesn't want to spoil it. Bob, to answer your question.
What? That wasn't me.
Oh, whoever answered. Whoever,
it says not Bob, so that was Simon.
Oh, Simon.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, though.
I am not taking a dump.
Can I go after Kevin? Because I'm sort of.
So just to finish up, I think it's worth seeing if you like Bond. But I'm looking forward to the restart of the next sequence. And I actually think that they may pick up on an old theory of that's been floating around that there have been multiple Bonds. And I think there are a couple of things in this film that indicate that. There's a history there that other people have played this part, even though there are other indications to say that this was entirely just one James Bond. I think there are other indications that, like there's a sequence where M is looking at all of the paintings of his predecessors, including Judi Dench and the first two M's. So going back to the Connery era. So I think there's something to be said. And then, of course, they pull out cars from the from other Bond's eras in this film as well, just randomly out of nowhere. So, all right, that's my take on it.
You're not going to discuss the end?
What, that he dies?
Yeah, that's the part I was referring to.
Yeah,
are we sure he dies, though? Because they don't see him blow up. They just see it from afar that the thing blows up. The island blows up, but they don't see him really.
He's not coming back. So unless
he
crawls out of the rubble saying, I'm James Bond with a new face. I don't think that they're going to do that. I think
that's what I wanted to get into. That's exactly what I've asked before I let the intern speak. Don't you feel that somebody's going to crawl out of the rubble, or we just feel we're going to start somewhere else?
No, I think we'll start somewhere else. I mean, they could do it as, James Bond is also a name, so the new 007, her name becomes J Bond or something like that. But I don't think that'll be the case. I think that it will be a new James Bond of some kind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Intern.
Okay. I thought I was going to be alone in this, not liking as much as the other Bond films, but as Kevin said, it wasn't the best entry in this entry in all the Bonds I've seen. I didn't feel it was like. I felt the same as Kevin, like it was okay, but it wasn't the best one of the, like, on the scale of James Bond films. I like the action of it, but it, like, all the whole movie altogether wasn't the best out of all of them, and like that's all I've got.
And 2 hours and 43 minutes, that's all you got?
That's all I got.
Douglas.
I guess I'm a little different. I loved most of this movie. I like 99% of it. The one thing I didn't like was the bad guy. I thought Rami Malek was completely miscast. Mm-hmm. His bad guy, Lucifer, or whatever, he's named after the devil, so he's evil. But he just wasn't dynamic enough. Him going up against Craig, there wasn't a spark there. There was nothing there to really bounce off against. And that was really driven home for me in the scene where Christopher Waltz has his one scene. He was a dynamic villain. He played off of Craig well. Rami Malek just did not do that. I wish they had a better villain for Craig's last mission. But everything else about the movie I loved. I loved that it opened like a horror film. The cold open wasn't a James Bond mission. It was actually his girlfriend's, you know, origin story, I guess. And it played out like a horror film. And I loved that. I thought that was really cool. I thought Fukunaga did an incredible job directing. He has such a great visual flair that I just love the scenes in the forest where bad guys come out of nowhere and the trucks come, but Bond, you know, still manages to shoot them down. Fukunaga is a brilliant director visually. Just looked at his other films, Jane Eyre or Peace of No Nation. I'm a big fan of his. I was a fan of his before he directed this movie, and I was very excited to see this. I was just let down by the bad guy.
Okay, Doug's got this movie down. I have to agree with Doug. Look at that. Come on, guys. Like, the beginning of this film is excellent. I had no idea of that creepy Japanese kabuki mask. I thought was phenomenal right off the top. I thought that with Finland or Switzerland, whatever they're shooting, where are they? Sweden?
Sweden, with, I think.
Sweden with the big ice. I thought it was great right off the beginning. Okay, and I enjoyed that. I liked the beginning. And then we cut to Bond. He's hanging out in Cuba, and I quite liked the Cuban thing with Ivana Lynch at the beginning. I thought that was really good when she screwed up his car. I think Bob didn't even mention the Ennis de Armas was so much fun. Oh, my God, that whole scene when she's going to, like, how is Bond going to get out of this? And he really doesn't get out of it. He sort of more just gets help from whatever Romy Malek's organization is called. Crap, I like to call it, because that's what I thought of it. I thought that whole scene worked well, and that motorbike scene in France was just freaking amazing. On the stairs, I mean, that was just great.
Yeah.
And then we move on, and then we get to there, then we go back, and then he comes back. And I love the whole thing with Felix Leiter. I love Felix Leiter. He's always my favorite part of every Bond film. And when they killed Leiter, I gotta say I was upset.
Didn't he die in one of the Timothy Dalton movies as well?
He did.
He was even better. Actually,
it's not the first time he's died, but I mean, I love Jeffrey Wright, so maybe that kind of hurt a little bit more than normal.
That is,
but I like this film. I mean, I will get it. Before I go on, I was going to say, I did take my wife to this. It's the first time we've been out in a while, like an actual movie date. And her only complaint was, is it's too freaking long. So that was her opinion on the movie. So continue on. We go back, and I love this. I mean, Romy Malek just stunk. Because I have to agree with Doug, when he goes to visit Blofeld in the prison, and they've already ripped out his eye, I'm like, oh my God, thank you. Christoph Waltz, at least you have something to talk about. Romy Malek was putting me to sleep. I'm like, so your plan is to bore the crap out of me? Because you have no plan. Like, I really got your nanobites and the crazy Russian scientists. Ooh, magnets! Oh my God, I was laughing so hard. He was brilliant. Whoever guy plays him is fabulous. And it just continues on there for me. They can keep introducing things I find enjoyable. I like the whole when they go crash Q on his date. I thought it was amazing. I thought that was really fun. Okay, and then we get to the end. And this is where I will argue I have a little bit of issues with. They really, like the scene when Malik's trying to talk about his master plan, and like he's expecting Bond not to kill everybody, so he's all set to go, and then he takes the kid and then decides he doesn't want, oh, just go away. Really? I did what you said, Mommy. I'm going to go hide under a table. What? Okay. And then he comes back for the big fight with Bond, and he really doesn't do anything then either. I just thought he was kind of useless. I have to agree with Doug. Other than Malik was it. I really thought Bond was going to escape because I had no idea up until the very end. Maybe Kevin obviously knew because he probably read the whole script beforehand. But now you guys know me, I don't watch trailers, so I don't know if it even alluded to that in the trailer. But yeah, I think Malik had nothing to do. I really wish Blofeld could have escaped. At least I thought he would have escaped after 4 years. And we don't have another Blofeld filled.
Well, how do you like Blofeld's funhouse ride where he comes rolling in on a little cart on a track?
Like it was he's
going
fun.
Like he's going to the dark ride or something, and then he dies in his chair.
I liked it. I really, really like how they just swing him in. Most of this I found, it should have been cut by at least half an hour, I felt. Parts of this could have been cut. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just take most of Rory Malamud's whole scenes out, and I think that would have saved me 15 minutes of boredom right there. So, overall, I love James Bond. I love this film. And just before we go, that jungle scene was phenomenal. When they're driving the Range Rovers through the thing, I thought that was really cool.
That was good.
And so, yeah, I think this has some really good aspects. I have to agree with Doug. Again, Rami Malek, cut him out, and I'm happy.
Yeah, I didn't think he. I thought he was terrible. I did say that in my review too.
Right, so, I don't know what. I don't know. I'm not hosting tonight.
Well, I think it might be time to bring the carnage then.
Let there be carnage. Venom, Let There Be Carnage, directed by Andy Serkis, screenplay by Kelly Marcel, starring Tom Hardy, Woody Harrelson, Michelle Williams, Naomi Harris again, Reed Scott, and Stephen Graham. I'm just waiting for someone to see my name.
Oh, I have. Saw your name. Dumple.
Dumple. Yeah,
well, story of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I can start with Carnage. You guys are going to hell. I don't know what to say. I hate this movie even more than I hate the last one. Oh, my God. These things are painful. I'm sitting here. If I have to listen to Eddie Brock talk to Venom in his head, I'm going crazy. I don't care. I have no interest in listening to Eddie Brock talk to anybody. Because I don't think Tom Hardy driving me nuts. Doing stupid voices and talking to the cashier for the last one because we need that. I'm hungry, Eddie. No, you can't eat her. No, I'm hungry. We have to go eat somebody. Can I eat? No, you can't. I don't care. Okay, let's get to Carnage. Who cast Woody Harrelson as Carnage? Terrible. Terrible. Woody Harrelson's hit and miss for me. He's always Woody Harrelson. Fine. Now, his girlfriend is the same age as he is, right? Am I correct here? Because they're both supposed to be teenagers. What, did he take an aging hormone pill and she didn't? What the hell? Explain that to me. They are nowhere near each other in age.
They tried to make him younger with the haircut.
And Tom Hardy magically figured out where all the Barties are? I don't think he can speak English, let alone figure out a thing on the board.
Well, that was
Tom Hardy. It was Venom who figured it out.
Oh, good. At least somebody figured it out. Who cares? I don't
care. Clearly it wasn't me.
This movie is so boring. I did not like. The fight scenes were awful. The plot was terrible. I just wanted it to end. This thing was like an hour and a half too long for me. I hate this thing. I don't know what to tell you. It's choppy. Yeah. I couldn't understand half of what was going on half the time because I was so bored of listening to this dialogue that was awful. Continuously. It's like somebody's taking a nail, driving it through my head, and making me watch Hellraiser 5 again. Piece of crap. Stop making these films. That's it. I'm not talking about it anymore because I hate it.
Bob? Okay, I'll go. I'm agreeing with Simon on this one because I didn't like it either. From the very first shot, from the very first scenes of Venom, and Eddie Brock talking, and I thought it was ridiculous because he answers, and I'm going, yeah, this is stupid. And then Woody Harrelson biting Tom Hardy, and that's how he becomes Carnage. I didn't think that happened in the comics, did it, Kevin?
I don't remember.
I think it did.
I don't remember.
Anyway, I thought comes off Venom. Venom might birth.
Venom Carnage. Gives birth.
Yeah,
gives birth, but this it just didn't work for me. Maybe it was different in the comics, and I don't remember it, but it just the movie didn't work, and for me, and it was too long. As Simon said, there were scenes where I thought it's gonna go somewhere, and then it just fell apart on me. So I didn't really like this. Okay. That's it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll agree with you guys. I think this was a waste of very talented actors. Uh-huh. Tom Hardy can be brilliant. Michelle Williams was given absolutely nothing to do in this movie, and she's a brilliant actress. Naomi Harris, Oscar nominated for Moonlight. She was given a nothing character. multi-nominated Woody Harrelson was awful in this movie. I'll agree with you guys. I didn't like it. I think I laughed maybe two or three times. I liked Woke Venom when he was at the rave speaking about how people and aliens should live together. The accidentally woke Venom, that made me giggle a little. But aside from that, I just wanted it to end.
Did you see this with your child?
Yes, both kids went with me to see this.
Did they hate it as much as I did?
Owen didn't hate it that much. Owen had an okay time at the theater with it. It's not his favorite movie by any chance, but he didn't hate it. Dylan did not like it at all.
Smart kid.
Is there a new Eminem song?
Yes, at the end
of
the film.
Yes, actually there is.
Okay. Jesus.
Before that great post-credit scene, that's probably the best part of the movie.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree with you guys in that.
Of course.
I really wasn't going to like the first Venom, and I was surprised that I did because it was so goofy and stupid. And this could just be called Goofy and Stupid Part 2. I found it as equally as entertaining. I like the Venom Eddie Brock interaction. I thought there was some fun there. I mean, I didn't hate Carnage. I didn't like Woody Harrelson, but he was exactly what I would have expected Carnage to be, and I hate those characters. I hate Venom and Carnage with a passion, but I thought that's exactly what they were on screen. This is a Venom versus Carnage movie, and that's exactly what I got. Two characters I didn't like fighting, and I thought it was okay. I thought it was, the action was okay. I thought it was very truncated storyline. Shriek is an interesting character, but not in this movie.
Does she do anything?
Does Shriek do anything?
She shrieks once, maybe.
Yeah, that's her mutant power, and she's a mutant. So,
Now
we haven't seen anything outside of X-Men films. We have not seen mutants. I think this was one of those, we can do it, let's do it, let's just have fun with it. As I said, I liked Venom in this film. I did like Woke Venom. I liked the scene where he went to the party and had his rave and was wearing beads and was like giving speeches and stuff like that. And they're like, cool costume. He's like, thank you very much. You know, like that. I thought that was cute. I thought that was, okay. So, what I did like more and what got me excited was the ending.
Ending's good.
So, through the whole movie, Venom keeps going, we want to be superhero. Let's be a superhero. Let's be the lethal protector. Eddie, lethal protector. He keeps driving. He says, fine. Okay. We'll be the lethal protector. Okay. So they go down to wherever, Cuba or somewhere in South America, and they're in a hotel room watching Telemundo, and Venom's a big fan of Latin American soap operas, apparently. And he starts talking about how he has hive memory from the symbiote planet and all the things he knows about different timelines and realities and stuff like that. And he says something about, like, I'm going to show you something. And then right at that time, and I don't think he was showing him that. I think at that point something affected reality, and reality changes around him, sort of like in WandaVision. And he's in a different hotel room in the same space on the same part of the planet, but it's a brand new hotel, and he's in somebody else's room. And some guy comes out of the bathroom. He's like, what are you doing here? He's like, dude, I have no idea. But at that point, Spider-Man is on the TV, and it's clear they're on the Marvel Earth. And I believe that's to set up the Venom versus Carnage movie for 2023. So now he may appear in the Spider-Man movie. I don't know. But and chances are what happened was because of things happening in the upcoming Spider-Man movie, but that's yet to be revealed. So that got me excited. because I'd love to see Venom versus Spider-Man.
Now, I just find it weird that there's a Doctor Strange, Infinite Madness, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then Sony's doing the same thing. You don't think they're tying into it together?
I think they're tying it together in a lot of ways. This whole, so, I mean, without spoiling Spider-Man, something happens with Doctor Strange in the Spider-Man movie, whereupon villains from alternate realities are showing up in Tom Holland's sphere. So, you know, we already know that Alfred Molina is back as Doc Ock, and in the trailer that you didn't see, they show some other characters that are back. So,
I've heard that.
And then a lot of what happens here will also play into Multiverse of Madness with Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Right.
I look forward to it.
Daniel, did you see this one?
No, I
didn't get to the theaters. But can I just ask, did you guys ever play that Spider-Man game for PlayStation and PC from like 2000? There's that final boss level with Carnage who melds with Doc Ock. That's why Carnage is one of my favorite characters.
Is this a PlayStation game or a PSP game?
I think it was for PC. I played it on PC.
I
think it was on the regular PlayStation, the original one.
There was a PS1 or PS2 Spider-Man game you got to fight Venom.
Yeah, PlayStation. It was for PS1 as well.
Okay. So that's play it a long, long time ago.
It was a fun game. Are we ready to hop into the Green Knight? Doug, did you have a better transition for that?
I was just going to say that's very chivalrous of you, but that's about it.
you're the captain now, and that's way better. The Green Knight, written and directed by David Lowery, starring Dev Patel, Alicia Vikander, Joel Edgerton, Sarita Choudhury, Sean Harris, and Ralph Ineson.
Well, sorry, are there people still in this movie? I just fell asleep.
I saw it last night, so it's fresh in my mind.
Oh, why don't you go first then?
I'd rather not because I didn't enjoy it. You said about it's a Green Knight, but it was like really dark, mostly at night. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Bingo.
I did not enjoy it. It didn't make any sense to me. I watched it and it just kept getting worse. For me, that is, unless somebody disagrees, which I'm sure they will. I didn't think Dev Patel did a good job in the movie. And the scenery around it's just like, I didn't enjoy it at all. So that's it for me. Go ahead.
Doug, you want to go or you want me to go?
If you're going to agree with the intern, then you can go because I'm feeling the opposite of...
Okay, then I'm in. So I just want to say I tried. And first off, I want to disagree with the intern. Don't knock Dev Patel. He's always good. Solid. It wasn't Dev Patel's fault this film moves at the pace of Doug's barbecue getting up to 400 degrees or Daniel at the speed he leaves his house. Slow. I don't generally like slow movies, but I will give this credit. It was very well shot. There was no issues with the shooting for me. It's not for me. I know that. I don't like anything period piece related. Very hard for me to like. That's an automatic knock against it. It just, everybody talks so slowly for me. And everything moved so slowly. And after a while, I just stopped caring because I don't care. Just too much old English talking, not enough action for me, and just really not a lot of interest. Obviously, I knew that the Green Knight had to gain redemption for what he did because he's a tool, a complete and utter tool. I get that. Don't get me wrong. I didn't miss that point. I don't feel this movie is there for me. And I read glowing reviews about this all over the place. So I'm obviously not seeing what other people are seeing, which kind of upsets me because I do try to see what other people are seeing. And this is one of the few I don't feel I ever got to that point with anything. I mean, I have no issues with the acting. It's just the storyline just didn't work for me. It's not like a Carnage issue, I want to say, where I hated it. I didn't hate the Green Knight. It's just not for me. That's it.
Bob, you looked like Jack Nicholson in Anger Management when you were like doing the nodding. I just wanted to slip that in there before whoever goes next.
I was cracking my neck because okay. I'm getting a neck ache.
Looked like you were urging Simon on.
It just cracked.
I guess I'm the opposite of you guys. This movie, when I first saw it, I did think it was kind of slow, but the imagery and the story and everything about it just stuck with me, and I kept thinking about it for days after I saw it. I took both my kids to see this, and
wow, no, you're loaded, man. You take kids everywhere.
I like my kids. I like spending time with them. But
one of us does.
But Owen actually, when his first reaction was, it was slow. It didn't really have anything to do with the original story of Gawain. But again, with him, it stuck with him, the imagery. And we had a good discussion about it, how each of the stories represents a different aspect of chivalry for the knights. So it's about Gawain learning to be the knight that he told his uncle, the king, that he was gonna be, so he could join the round table, and how each story represented a different aspect of chivalry. I think I just said that twice now. My mind's going. I think my favorite story was the ghost story about the ghost who lost her head and he had to dive into the pond to find it.
That was kind of cool.
I loved this movie. I loved the makeup of the Green Knight. I thought he looked fantastic. I thought the movie was shot incredibly. It was gorgeous to look at all the way through. And the acting, Alicia Vikander, I think this might be her best performance in a long time. I loved her in Ex Machina. I think this performance might have even topped that. I'm not sure. I have to rewatch it again to see, but I love this movie.
Sorry, guys. Did you see the Alicia Vikander movie, A Light Between Two Oceans? Do I have the right name of the title?
Is that the one with her husband, Michael Fassbender?
Yes.
I saw the trailer. I hadn't seen the movie.
Okay. I think that's her best performance in a film.
I like that movie.
It looked too sad for me. I wasn't in the mood to watch.
Oh, it's sad. All right.
Something that's sad.
It's heavy.
I was a mess.
Kevin, I don't think saw this one, so we can move along. Because he's not jumping in. So I think we're going to go talk about Doug's Barbecue again, because we're heading down
in
to
my,
New
in my
York.
Neck of the woods by Newark.
So, Doug, we know we have to let you kick this off, because me and you are I don't know. Kevin might be just as big a Soprano fan as we are, so let's go.
Can I sneak in the cast list first?
No. It's the Sopranos.
Many Saints of Newark, directed by Alan Taylor, written by David Chase, Lawrence Connor, starring Alessandro Nivola, Leslie Odom Jr., John Bernthal, Corey Stahl, Michael Gandolfini, Billy Magnuson, Michaela De Rossi, John Maggiore, Ray Liotta, and Vera Farmiga.
I'm gonna be honest here. It is very hard for me to give an unbiased opinion on this movie. I took my son to see the world premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival, so I got to see Robert De Niro come on stage and introduce David Chase, and then David Chase introduced all the actors who were in the movie, and then in the audience there was members of the cast of the Sopranos TV show, so I got caught up in it. The audience loved the movie. Anytime there was a reference to the TV series, the audience cracked up or cheered uproariously. So I did get caught up in that aspect of it. So it is hard for me to look at this unbiasedly. I love the experience of seeing the movie that way. I had a great time watching it. I did rewatch it again when it came on HBO Max, And I do wonder if somebody who's never seen The Sopranos would like this movie. I almost think it might have been a prerequisite to see the series so you get some of the stuff that's going on. The movie does spoil, even though it's a prequel, it does spoil aspects of the TV series. But on its own, I think it's a decent mobster story. I don't think it's the best mobster story that has been put on, that has been put on film. The Sopranos, the series itself, I think ranks up there with The Godfather, with Goodfellas. But this movie on its own, I don't think it stands on its own as well. I would probably give it a 5 out of 10, to be honest.
Feeling generous, aren't you?
Yes. I told you, I got caught up.
For being unbiased.
Kevin, you're up.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it's just me and Doug? Yep. I have to agree with a lot what Doug said. If you've never seen The Sopranos, I don't know how you're supposed to have any idea what's going on in this film. Everybody is basically filling in holes we needed in The Sopranos. But I just felt it didn't really do anything because they were kind of forcing things upon me. Oh, look, they're, what is that? Forgotten his name, Sal's character with the big stupid hair. I'm like, I don't care. Like, where was Johnny Sachs? Was Johnny Sachs here and I missed him?
Was he there?
Because I know Paulie was there.
I think Johnny Sachs was there.
The problem is with this film, these people aren't good actors. A lot of it seemed just hodgepodge, storylines not really going anywhere. And the Junior was interesting. I will give the Junior storyline interesting because that kind of amused me. We got to learn what Junior was, and he was just a dick all the time. Nobody liked him.
I disagree. I thought some of the acting was really good. I like
Corey Stoll, I thought was excellent. Naval didn't do anything for me.
I thought he was really good. I liked him as Dickie. I also thought Vera Farmiga channeled Nancy Marchand perfectly. I thought she was great. I think John Barenthal might have been underused. I guess would be a good, just a little. I wish there was more of him. I think he probably should have influenced his son more than Dickie Moltisanti did, but whatever. I also thought Ray Liotta was really good.
Okay, Ray Liotta was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I really thought the storyline was just flawed. It seemed to bounce all over the place. And same with the Italian act. I don't know if she's Italian or American, the one they brought in from Italy.
Oh, the wife?
I don't know. She seemed to be fine and then not know what she was doing and then go back to fine. And I was kind of like, and Tony Soprano's kid was okay, but I just felt they didn't have a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just kind of there to introduce, oh, meet Carm. And the sister was good. I thought the sister was spot on casting. It looked exactly like Janice on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite shocked at that. I just feel the storyline wasn't there. Like, I really don't think they had a full plot to give us.
Well, I think the problem is it didn't really tell the full story. The ending was obviously setting up a sequel that would be, you know, in between this and the Sopranos TV show, because this really wasn't Tony's story. That would be the next movie. Or actually, now they're teasing a HBO Max series that would take place in between Many Saints and the Sopranos. So maybe the story will continue there, where we see the actual rise of Tony and whatever becomes of Leslie Odom Jr.'s character.
Who I thought was quite good. I quite enjoyed his storyline. It was the only one I kind of liked.
Mm-hmm.
But they took out Tyson pretty good. Is his name Tyson? Yeah. Tyson got killed, his cousin, a little quick, I thought. I found that really didn't build enough off that. I thought there might have been a little bit more gang war, like violence between the two. It's there, but not really. I find they had that one good scene on the boulevard I thought was good, the shooting scene. Kind of worked, but again, it just falls flat again after that. I'm like, give me a storyline here. Like, work on it. I don't need to know what every single Artie Bocos. I don't care. Artie's Artie. Like, he runs a restaurant. I don't need to know more than that. Oh, look, it's Carmelo with 30. I don't need to know that. I don't care.
I like the scene where they took out the cousin because that scene was just so brutal to me. It made me uncomfortable to watch it. But I do agree with you that it could have been expanded. I do think a series would have been better so you could get to know all these characters better. And I do. I want to know more about Leslie Odom Jr. I want to know what eventually becomes of him in the world of The Sopranos because his character was never mentioned in the show.
Yeah, I guess what I agree with you. And you're saying they're talking about another show. I'm done. I'm not going to watch any more of this. Like, Sopranos to me was perfect for the most part. I mean, obviously I had some issues on a few things, but that's not for this show. I'm not going to watch any more Sopranos. If they make a movie, of course I'll watch it because I'm a movie nut, but I don't need to spend more time in this world in any way. I have no idea what's next. So, guys?
We're ready to open the night books? On Netflix. Night Books, directed by David Yurovesky, written by Mickey Daughtry and Tobias Iaconis, produced by Sam Raimi, which I thought was cool. Starring Kristen Ritter,
I missed that.
Winslow Fegley, and Lydia.
You didn't see Night Books?
No, I missed that Sam Raimi produced it.
Yeah, I didn't see that until I looked at the Wikipedia. So I thought that was cool. Hmm. I have seen this one. Do you want me to go first?
Oh, you actually have time? You've done your pizza pockets?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're very good. Might have a little stain that I could go, you know.
What kind did you have?
I didn't have pizza pockets.
Oh. You're making me hungry.
I can't go on with the bit. This is definitely a me movie. I'm a fan of, like, family-oriented horror. And that was the sense I got from the Night Books trailer. So that's why I picked this one. And we always have to put a Netflix one on. So that's also a lie. I like the premise of it. I love the setting of the library. At one point when he was looking through the books and he found that like unicorn girl, like the diary, honestly, I had gotten in my mind that there was going to be a twist that because he was picking out all these classic horror novels. I thought that the witch would have been like keeping like Stephen King, like Mary Shelley in this library until they come up with their masterpieces and then she lets them go. And that's like, I want to see that movie to be honest, but that's just me kind of inserting my thought of what was happening. But I like the style of this. I didn't think Kristen Ritter was cast well for the first hour, but then as there was kind of a development with the character, I felt like it was a bit more believable in the third act with what happens with the big honcho. I don't know who I would have cast as the witch, but I don't think I would have thought of Kristen Ritter first for this. I didn't mind it. I thought it was fun, not too scary. Could be scary for some kids. Some intense stuff. I liked. Actually, the little shredders with the face, I thought they were creepy. And I thought that creature design was pretty cool. And I liked those scenes, kind of like it was like Harry Potter when that book of, and from the fifth one, tries to eat Harry. I thought that kind of got reminiscent. I thought of that. Sorry, I haven't done this for a while, mumbling. Those are my brief thoughts on this.
Just brief, Bob?
Yeah, not so brief.
Intern.
I gotta go with Daniel on this one. I liked it. I'm just a better version of it. It reminded me of Inkheart and Bedroom Stories, the Brendan Fraser one and the Adam Sandler one. It's in a way.
Bedtime Stories. Respect the name of. Sorry, Bedtime Stories. I heard Bedroom.
No, Bedtime Stories. Sorry.
Okay, I heard Bedroom.
Not saying it properly. Okay, anyway. Sorry. I thought it was I agree with you. I thought it was a better version of those two movies. I thought the concept was really good. The set in the library was like the stairs up to, and he's finding all of these books by, like you said, Mary Shelley and whatever else. And I thought like he comes to the point where he's got no stories left, so he makes one up on like out of the blue, and he's still a good storyteller, even though I know that was in the script that he was a storyteller anyway. But I thought it was really well done, and they thought they get out of the house, and they end up going to what is Hansel and Gretel, and he's saying, oh, this is like it starts there, so that the original witch is there, and Natasha was got her powers from her. I just thought it was really well. I thought it was really well done.
Oh, gee, witch. So yeah, that's where I meant that. Right, I kind of bought into her casting a bit more there when she's like, okay, she's not the head honcho. So
yeah.
Also pretty cool, like how it kind of dissects storytelling as well.
Yeah,
which I thought was fun.
That was really good.
Okay, I guess I'm up next. What did I think of this? I'm still pondering. I just think it's okay. I think Kristen Ritter was terribly miscast as the witch, because I'm like, oh great, Kristen Ritter doing the Kristen Ritter voice. She's not going to do anything exciting. Oh look, she's still doing the Kristen Ritter voice. She's trying to be scary. I'm not scared. Maybe little kids will be scared. Maybe I should put it on for a little kid, see how she feels. Maybe she'll find this scary. Yeah. Start there. Get rid of Kristen Ritter, new casting. Give me the Kristen Gentleworth. She can do a scary witch voice. I want her. I like the kid. Yeah. The kid was my favorite part. The little kid that was helping her out, and the other little kid, I can't remember the character's names, but I thought they were really good. I liked the whole book room when they were going to the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to figure stuff. Pardon?
All right. Yasmin.
Yasmin was excellent. I liked the kids. The kids didn't annoy me. That was really good. The twist was kind of cool, and we find out what Kristen Ritter was stealing from the other witch. I'm like, okay, the story's starting to move a bit, and I quite like that part. So, but the first 40 minutes, I was like, don't really like this. It's kind of it. Got better. But I thought I love the set design. I really don't think things get enough promotion on set design. It looked good. It looked like where they were supposed to live. I felt bad for the kids what they had to eat, but that's just the way it goes. So overall, I liked it. I liked the end of the film. I did enjoy it. I liked his stories. I liked the kids' stories a lot, the way he had to tell stories. I always thought they were kind of good. Now she would correct him on his stuff. But again, I did think that premise worked, and I really felt a kid would have issues with these things. I mean, he has to tell these stories, he's going to die. I kind of got that. So, no, overall, I thought it was okay. I just wish it was a little miscast with Kristen Ritter, and that's about it.
Yeah. And it's like super believable that, like, a 10-year-old would write these stories, and I think that was the cool thing about it.
Yeah, or me, one or the other.
I guess I'm a little under Simon on this. I didn't really love this movie.
Is there a way to be under me?
Well, I think you liked it a little more than I did. I thought it was kind of
showing you was under Simon, so it works. Yeah.
So kind of schizophrenic to me that it wanted to be a family horror movie, but at times I thought it might have gotten a little too intense for its target audience. That creature like going after Yasmin's face and the witch at the end. That I thought that could get pretty intense for what I thought the target audience would be.
A little intense for me.
It was interesting to watch the witch melt. I thought that was done pretty well when you see it's the candy melting. But again, I thought that could have gotten kind of intense for younger kids. And I don't think anybody really older than 13 or so would have a lot of interest in the story if they're not, you know, movie fans or anything like that. I don't know. The movie wasn't for me, and I'm not exactly sure who it was for.
I would say it's for the 10 to 12 audience. I think that's really what this film is for.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Kristen Ritter's a witch isn't scary. I think the 10 to 12 audience, I think it's geared for the kids in the film. I think that's what it's shot for. And I think that's what they were going for. So I think it's just for a kid to be at home for Netflix and they want to have a scary Halloween movie. You know what I mean? And this would be scary for them.
Yeah, it's like an entry Halloween movie to a horror movie to get interested in horror. It's like a gateway movie. And also,
you know, in that case, I would recommend The Bronx versus Vampire, or Vampires versus The Bronx.
Yeah.
See, that would be
another.
I like that one.
My 12-year-old would find that too scary.
Okay. See, I found that one to be more of an action film.
I agree, but my daughter, who's 12, this would be perfect for her.
Okay.
Not too scary. Like, I mean, literally not too scary for her.
Okay.
Like, she's a young 12 still to this day. Like, I don't know why. She lives in my house. Like, she watches Outer Banks, but movies, she does not want to be scared in any way. What's up next, host?
I was just going to say also, I think that this is also geared for me because, like, if you love Goosebumps in my age group, like growing up around that time, these are kind of movies that have that kind of sense of nostalgia, I think.
Okay,
buddy. I'm pregnant. Okay, I don't know. Doug, did you have an interesting one for that?
I did not. Yeah.
You're not pregnant. You're
just an unpregnant pause.
Yes.
Ooh. Written and unpregnant. Ooh, written and directed. One. That is a good one. Written and directed by Rachel Lee Goldenberg, starring Harry, wow. Starring Haley Lou Richardson, Barbie Ferreira, Alex McNichol, Breckin Meyer, Sherilyn Beard, Giancarlo Esposito, and Mary McCormick. And from Dickie Roberts, she has gotten.
Bob, you saw this intern. You're starting.
You know, I told you I saw it. Sorry. I started watching and I thought, okay, this is going to be a typical Bob movie, but it started out that way, but then it got silly, and if I can say silly, I did like it, but it started going off the rails when they said, okay, road trip, and they sort of got into the road trip. They had to stop. They got into this couple's car that was like overly pro-life, and I'm going, oh, now where's it going? That's when it started going off the rails at that point for me. Well, before that, but it's sort of like on a 50-50 as of liking it. I can't explain it. I did like it, but and then again, there's parts I didn't like, so half and half. So it'd probably be 4.5 out of 10 for me. That doesn't make
okay. sense. Is it fine?
No, it's not fine.
Okay, let me help Bob out.
It's less than fine.
Stuff.
How about that?
He missed last night, obviously. Let's go a little bit more in depth. To like this film, you have to really just buy the friendship between the two characters.
I'm not.
You have to actually believe they were friends at some point, which I will get. I can see they went to high school, one went one way, one went another way. Totally get that. And obviously, I thought some of the jokes were good. I thought the car getting stolen when the cops show up was excellent. I thought that was the only joke that worked for me. The pro-lifers was just, you could do that was coming a mile away. You knew something was going on there, and I didn't think. I don't know. At times, I just never felt this film went somewhere new. I felt I had seen this before 100 times, and these buddy films that was just kind of flat. I tried to buy the friendship. I thought it was well cast. I did think they were good a bit, like I said, actual friends, but I was just bored. I'm just like, okay, how are they going to stop them from getting where they need to go this time? Okay. How are they going to stop them? Okay. Again, I just don't think there's enough depth to this film. I don't even understand, again, why this film was made. Just for the Harry Lou Richardson fans, namely Daniel Prine over there. Like, is this film just made for him? I just don't feel there's enough to talk about in this film for anybody. Either you like it or you don't. And it's based, like, I thought the fairgrounds would be funnier. I know they tried to mix in that lesbian scene, and I still didn't care. I'm like, this is just not doing anything for me. Again, I'm not sure who this film is for. Maybe 13 to 16-year-old teen girls or boys for Haley Richardson? I don't know. I just found it extremely uninteresting.
Yeah, maybe like older high school kids. I don't know. I can go. Yeah, I am definitely a Haley Lou Richardson fan. I really liked her in the film. She was one of the main reasons I liked this a lot. I bought into the chemistry between her and Barbie Ferreira, who is, I think, is the one who plays Bailey. I don't think she's been in a lot. I think she was on that HBO show with Zendaya. I can't remember the name right now.
Euphoria?
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure she's on that. I haven't seen it, but I saw that on her Letterboxd because she only has like two acting roles. So she's on that. So I thought she did a good job. I bought into that scene when they kind of encounter the dad who is also in Albuquerque, which is where they went for the road trip. I thought it was hilarious when Haley Lou's character Veronica tased him. I think that was the high point of the movie for me. And I enjoyed it as a road trip kind of Juno mix where I thought the premise worked. I can agree with Bob that it gets a little bit goofy with Breckenmeyer and Sugarland Beard, but I like them as actors. I thought it kind of almost gave it into like a horror spin. Not really, but just like a thriller aspect where it's just like, okay, well, we're going to force our beliefs down your throat. And I don't think that movie ever really went into that too much other than maybe the Mary McCormick scene at the end where it's kind of almost, like a similar thing to the, like in Love, Simon, where it's like, okay, it's okay to be you kind of thing. It's like, okay to do whatever you want with your body. So I thought, I don't think it was shoving it down our throat, but I think it was a necessary for the story. But yeah, overall, I probably liked it the most here. I think I still would have liked it similarly if it wasn't Haley Lou Richardson, because I thought the writing was pretty good, but yeah, I generally enjoyed it.
I'll admit I only saw the trailer and realized it just wasn't for me. So instead of sitting here trashing a movie that wasn't made for me, I will just say I saw the trailer.
What were your thoughts on the trailer?
That it was not made for me. And I was like, oh, look, Giancarlo Esposito. I like him. And that was about it.
Yeah, his appearance is very random. Like, because he set up where they go to one town and they find, like, a rundown bus company, and then there's a limo rental the right next door, and he's kind of like a conspiracy theorist almost. And like, you know how they set it up that it's going to be a big actor, so that was kind of cool. But it's like, ah, I know, everybody knows him kind of thing. So that's kind of how they stage that.
Is he in it because of the Albuquerque connection?
Is he a local actor to there, or just because of Breaking Bad?
Well, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
They both take place in Albuquerque.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Kevin, did you see this? Oh, okay. Where's my list?
So does that bring you up any memories of murder?
Hey, I like it. Memories of Murder, directed by Bong Joon-ho, written by Bong Joon-ho and Shim Sang-bo, starring Song Kang-ho, Kim Sang-kim, Kim Roy-ha, Park Hae-il, and Byung-hee Bong,
it's very good.
Yeah. Same director as Parasite and many other good
movies. Really? Isn't that why you picked it?
It's on my Letterboxd watch list, and yes, I do and really very much enjoy his movies.
All right, okay.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, I'm going to start first that the intern didn't watch this for some odd reason, which I find very strange since he begged me to have the movies and he had a whole week off and he didn't have time to see this, which I think is kind of strange, but I will start off. Oh my God, man. He could shoot a movie like nobody else. What a wonderfully shot movie. I love the way he pulls things out of scenes I didn't see. I like the way the characters are always not framed the same way. They're always moving. Even when they're talking, it's not a static shot ever. There's always something going on in the thing. So those are positives. I enjoyed 75 to 80% of this story. I liked the first half a lot. Absolutely loved the first half of this film. The second half, I find it seems to go over a lot of stuff that happened in the first half again, just with a little bit different perspective. And I had a little bit of problems with that. I had a lot of problems with the second detective that kept beating the crap out of everybody. Like, what the hell? Everybody meets these jumping over desks, kung fu kicking people. Who does that? Like, is that comedy? And same with the first detective when he beats up that guy from another place. Oh, you're a rapist. I'm like, where is this coming from? This makes no sense to me. And what threw me for a loop, I don't know if I didn't know they did this in Korea, when they do the reenactment of the crime for reporters, and they bring the accused, I was like, that's insane stuff. And stuff like that. I really think this film gets bogged down in the second half. That's what my problem is. I find it slows down to such a pace that they just want to go more character depth than actual story depth. And I think that should have been done earlier because they've already introduced me to these characters. I'm familiar with these characters. I want this crime solved. I want to know more. And I had a lot of problems staying focused in the second half. So overall, I enjoyed it. I just had a lot of problems in the second half. So there you go.
Yeah. I thought there was a lot of like good character depth, and especially with just it being about like, oh, like you can't judge a killer just by looking at him and you can't know for sure. I thought that was an interesting thing, especially with the main actor's character. I agree that it kind of went over the same beats as the first half, and it probably could have been in the hour 50 range instead of over 2 hours.
Yeah.
Not sure what I'd cut. I think I would just make some scenes like more concise, I guess. And with this and the chaser, I think with the parasite, you understand the nuances a lot more, but with this and that and the chaser, I don't think I got the nuances completely that they'll keep people for so many days, like almost torture them, to get the information because they just want someone for the crime. And not necessarily the one who did it. And it's just, I enjoyed it a lot, but, for all the work it goes through, it's anticlimactic, and I think it's true to its, themes, but I liked it more than Burning, but it's, I've seen this as like hyped up, and I just don't know if it, on first watch, I don't know if it deserved the hype for me.
Hold up. You like this more than Burning?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Burning I love serial is such a killers,
complete
though.
Story, though.
I thought you didn't Burning like Burning.
I like it's, Burning a lot. I gave it a 6.
Oh, I thought we all thought it was boring.
I did not like Burning.
Yeah, I didn't like it that much either.
Do I have the wrong movie? Isn't Burning the one with the guy from The Walking Dead?
Yeah, Stephen Dean.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I like Burning more than you guys said.
Oh, yeah, we all thought it was boring, I thought.
That little kid peeing to his grandma and telling her his Mountain Dew.
No, that's Minari. That's Minari. Burning was the one with the...
Oh, with the serial killer. Yeah, that stunk. That was boring as crap.
It was a slow burn. Yeah. I was going to say,
I'm getting my Korean movies mixed up. Sorry. Yes. I like Minari. You're right. I agree with you. This is better than The Burning. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're good. You're all good. Doug or Kevin?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay.
You guys don't realize I've been doing shows nonstop
for
the last 3 weeks. Like, I barely saw anything.
Totally fair.
And I loved this movie. I thought it was fantastic. I had been waiting a long time to see this because it was the one Bong Joon-ho movie that I couldn't find anywhere. And then Criterion announced that they were putting it out on disc, and I was really excited because I really wanted to see this. This is Bong Joon-ho's Zodiac, based on a true serial killer story. The killer, when the movie was made, had not been identified. So I knew the ending. I knew going in. They would not solve the crimes in the film. Okay. They actually did solve the crimes in 2019, but that was years after the movie was made. I love this movie. I do think I do compare it very favorably to Fincher's Zodiac. But man, Bong Joon-ho just, like Simon said, knows how to shoot a scene. There's the scene where the woman's walking in the rainstorm.
Oh, that was awesome.
And the lightning, and she's looking around, then all of a sudden when the lightning cracks, the guy comes out right in front of her, shot beautifully, so tense. I love this movie. I do in my head kind of get it confused with Bong Joon-ho's film Mother, because I saw them at about the same time, and they both deal with police investigating a crime. So both do have scenes of the cops reenacting crime scenes, so I get them mixed up in my head a little bit. But Memories of Murder is just a fantastic movie, and I highly recommend it.
Did you guys notice the guy lurking in the weeds or whatever the cornfield at one point? I think it was around that lightning strike moment. I noticed in the background, you see his head pop up, and then he goes back down like a whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
It was so creepy.
Yeah.
It was so good. I want to watch it again already, but just like learning more of the nuance. And I think I would like it more if I knew that it was never going to be solved in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cool way to go into it, I think.
And now there is just one Bong Joon-ho movie I have left to see, his first one. There's dogs in the title. I know that. I forget the full title, but it's the one movie of his I haven't seen yet.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to chaser that down. That's worth a groan. Okay, the chaser. Sorry, I just got a cough. Okay, The Chaser, directed by Na Hong Jin and written by Na Hong Jin, starring Kim Hyun Sik, Ha Jung Woo, and Si Yong Hee. Two South Korean movies today.
Can I just yell at you for picking two super bleak movies?
I didn't know they would thematically be so similar.
I watched this movie last night, and the way it ends, oh my god, it is so bleak. There is nothing joyous about this movie. It's incredibly well made. It's shot fantastically. The actors are all great. But the movie is so bleak. There is no redemption. There is no light. It's just a dark, dark movie. And if you're into that, go for it. I recommend it. But this is, wow. All I can say is wow. That fish tank at the end. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to agree with Doug. This thing is just bleak. I'm like, there's no redemption for anybody in this film at any time. I was kind of like going, is Daniel trying to kill me? Yes, like, I watched these back to back. I watched Chaser, then I watched Memories of a Murder.
And then did you watch it out with I'm Pregnant or the 10th
film? Yes, I'm Pregnant was the next film afterwards. I'm watching them like, I just with the Chaser was, I don't know, had a little bit more going on. Again, I find the storyline I'm interested in is the murder guy. And again, we focus, maybe it's a Korean cinema thing, they focus more on that detective that's not a detective anymore. He's the chaser guy. And he's just running around. And I don't know. It just seemed to get darker and darker and dark. Oh, my God, we're getting darker. I'm like, is there going to be a resolve to this? I'm done. That's it. I'm going to kill Daniel. I have to agree. Well acted, just not again. I just got bored again. I needed half an hour, 20 minutes cut off again. I just thought it was too long for the story they were doing. Because I found, again, at one point in the film, in the second half, they're going over the same stuff. I'm like, I've been here. I got it. Can we get to work on what we're here to do?
Yeah.
And again, I found it very similar, the Korean people beating up other Korean people constantly. I'm kind of like, where's Daniel going with his list here? I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's not enjoyable. It's just, again, not for me.
Yeah, The Chaser, I had heard good things about The Chaser. and it was on my Letterboxd watch list. And I really think South Korean serial killers go well, so well together. Like, I saw The Devil.
What I think is funny, there was another movie called Chaser, and I almost got that first. And I went to your Letterbox. Like, oh, needs to be watched by Daniel. Yep, I'm watching the right one.
Oh, okay. Same thing with Memories of Murder, right?
No, Memories of Murder, I knew it was a Bong Joon-ho film. I was fine. Okay. But this one, there were two films with within about a year of each other. No, Memories of Murder, I got the documentary. I started watching, going, wait, this is not right, or something.
Yeah, the 2021, right?
Yeah. Yes, I started, I'm like, nope, this is the wrong thing. Back up. So, you gave me the years. That did help me. That's how I found the movie. Again, I think us as North Americans need to watch more Korean film, because I think there's a whole cinema we've never seen.
For sure. And I think that's with, like I was saying earlier, like the nuances of this. Like, I thought it was interesting. Like, some of it just goes over my head in the way where I thought the themes of incompetent cops and just the idea of trusting someone who is the victim more than the one who beats them the hell up, especially when this guy's like, yeah, I've killed 12 people, LOL, and they can't really hold them. And they're like, well, I mean, maybe you're lying. Why would you tell us this? And I think that's a very – there's a movie that came out at Fantasia called Midnight, which I will put on my list as soon as that releases, because I thought that was like one from South – it's a thriller from South Korea, and it is so good. But anyway, back to this one. I totally agree. It's totally bleak, to a point where you can't really feel any emotion, even though what's happening is totally tragic. Like the thing with the cops, like the incompetence of the cops and the cops staying outside of that Quickie Mart for so long. It's like, yeah, it takes that long to get a pack of cigarettes. I thought that was just very frustrating. And just, yeah, just the tragedy of a neighbor trusting another neighbor. And then, oop, here's a hammer. Do what you want, you know? But yeah, I thought it was well shot, much like Memories of Murder. I thought the chase scenes were cool, and it, like, they both have like a very similar chase scene at one point. So I thought that was kind of fun. And they do foot races pretty well.
I actually read that the first chase between the killer and the pimp guy took 7 days to shoot.
Oh really?
Really?
Yeah.
It shows, actually. I mean, it seems like they.
It was intense.
The editing is very good in that. In those moments.
Excellent.
And that's usually my complaint with action movies. Like, it's too, like, choppily quick, edited. Quick cuts. Yeah. Especially if they take it too.
Hold on. Intern?
Actually, it says in the trivia part that there was one scene where he chases him in the alley. It wasn't scripted. The actor actually did slip. So that wasn't scripted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the director liked it so much he left it in.
The slipper.
Yeah.
Instead of the shoes.
Did you watch this intern or no?
Yes, I did, actually. I had to look at IMDb just now while you were talking about it, because like I should have muted the sound while I was watching it, because I was looking at it, I didn't understand what it was about until I read all the storylines, etc. And I really liked the fight scenes, like the choreography and the hammer and whatever else they used. And if I had turned the sound off, I probably would have been able to concentrate on the movie more, because I wasn't understanding it up till that point. And then I had to look at this and I thought, oh yeah. And
you watched it with subtitles, right?
What subtitles? No.
Oh,
I didn't see any subtitles.
Oh, no subtitles. It's a South Korean movie, so you watched it in a language that
yes,
yeah, you did not get any of it then.
No,
I don't know.
But I still enjoyed it, even though it was with just the other Korean language.
That seems like a very interesting experiment to watch it with, like, without any subtitles and just.
Well, I did
like,
the same thing with
the gist of the movie through
the Godzilla movie versus whatever, and I watched it both in English and in Japanese, and I'm going, okay, whatever, but.
Interesting.
Even though there was no subtitles and it was in another language, I'm watching it. And if I had to turn down the sound, I probably could have concentrated more on like the action, even though I saw the action and I really enjoyed it in that part, like, the chase scenes and everything else that you talked about. and the guy with the, just beating on the young girl with the hammer, just, and you see the blood just spurting, and that was, I thought that was good too.
So interesting. I'm just so interested by the experience of watching it without subtitles.
Too late now.
Yeah, I've done that before. I try to watch things without subtitles.
That sounds kind of like a roller coaster of an experience.
Yeah, it was. I saw that too.
Okay, I'm going to say I watched this about 2 years ago, but I remember most of it, so I'll go first. You guys can fill in my holes. Okay. I love...
Title of your sex tape.
That's what true. She said. I'll go with the cast list first. Roller Coaster, directed by James Goldstone, written by Richard Levinson, William Link, starring George Segal, Richard Widmark, Timothy Bottoms, Harry Gordino, Susan Strasberg, Henry Fonda, and a very young Helen Hunt.
Sparks.
Okay, Simon, we'll fill your holes.
Yeah, fill them up. I love these kind of 70s movies. I think 70s are pretty main for this. I just don't think they had any budget to do anything in this film. It seems all very cheap, very quick. It almost feels like a blown up TV movie. I think it was honestly written for TV probably, but some of them gave them enough money that they could make a feature film out of it. I don't really think there's a lot going on in here, especially when the end climax comes and they're focusing. I'm like, I don't care. I didn't like anybody in it. I didn't find it really that interesting at times. I just think if you're into 70s films, you get it here, but it's not very good. That's all I really remember.
The villain getting yeeted away by the roller coaster happens so quick.
Isn't that right, the end?
Yeah, and it's
by
like
the coaster.
It's like snap, and you barely see it, and then just he's on the side covered in blood. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a TV movie that had more money.
Yeah. It's very, I'd be curious what the budget would be for it, but I can bet it as one of you are talking. But I enjoyed it to the extent that I like procedurals like this one, where it's kind of like, okay, like, what's he doing? Why is he doing it? I thought that aspect of it was like kind of boring between drama and thriller, and I thought that was interesting. I would have liked to have known a bit more of his motives, because I think he just feels like a guy who's just like, hey, you got an amusement park, maybe I'll blow it up. I picked this because I like disaster movies, and I had never seen like this kind of disaster movie, which is roller coasters. I know Final Destination 3 is why I don't like roller coasters as they die at the beginning of the movie on a roller coaster.
The budget was $9
million. Adjusted for inflation? Or $9 million back then?
So it's estimated. I don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah, that checks out. Yeah. They should have been, if they got $10 million, they could have done a convincing villain death then.
Or 40.
Jeez. But yeah, no, nothing I'd really watch again. But it's fine. I'm glad it was on my Letterboxd. I'm glad I found
really?
It on my Letterboxd watch list, and I enjoyed it to a certain extent. And that initial crash scene with like the carts coming off, like I was like, okay, that tension there. I was like, all right, is it just gonna blow up the whole coaster? Or is it gonna? And then to the ramp, and I thought that scene was pretty cool. Just watching them. That's probably where $8 million of this movie was spent. with the cart crash,
and the other million went to Sparks.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Did you want to say that's why you thought this was?
Yeah, I was going to ask Daniel if he picked this movie because he watched the Edgar Wright Sparks Brothers documentary. Because I was like, why is Daniel picking this? And then all of a sudden, Sparks comes out. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. They're in this movie. Yeah.
I had never heard of them, like Sparks, and I think mostly the reason I like disaster movies, and it's the same era as Towering Inferno, like made 3 years after it, and I thought I'd find one obscure 70s movie that maybe some of us haven't seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I did watch it. I thought it was a bit too long. It was almost 2 hours. I think they could have cut a half hour out, and it would have been a really tight 90-minute thriller, especially that middle part where Timothy Bottoms is making George Segal carry a – go buy a hat. Now go get yourself weighed. Now go take a ride on the monorail. Now go look at the zebras. And that there's the rule of threes in Hollywood. Things happen in threes. This went on for like seven different things, and as I cut it down, just cut it down. This is too long.
Yeah, that's fair.
But aside from that, I do think it was decent, but it wasn't. It's not a 70s movie I will watch again.
There's no reason to watch it again. It's just a bland.
Leave it in the 70s.
This Towering Inferno, I will watch again.
That's an excellent movie.
Awesome.
It's great. It's 2 hours 45, so I can not watch it like every year. You know what I mean? But like every so often, it's like, ooh.
That and The Poseidon Adventure are my two favorite disaster movies.
Sorry,
have you seen The Return to the Poseidon Adventure sequel?
No.
I think I did, but Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno, I could watch those anytime. I love them.
I'm with you.
I really love The Poseidon
Adventure. That's it for the movies, right?
No. Hang on.
Oh, you said
not say anything yet.
Then say something, please.
Well, I was trying to, but you said that's it for the movies. Okay. I agree with Doug. What? I agree with Doug that it was too long, and I just read a reuser review here that said they gave it a 7 out of 10, which I don't think so. It says, suspenseful and intriguing disaster movie with an all-star cast, well-directed. I'm sorry, but no. As Doug said, it was too long. I thought the end scene where he gets not hit by the car.
Roller coaster.
Yeah. But it just felt draggy for me. They could have cut it, as you said, cut it down a bit, but so I didn't really, as you said, that wouldn't watch it again. I'd watch like with the other two you've mentioned. So that's it. Yeah.
That guy is entitled to give this film a 7 if he wants to, though.
If he wants to, I know, if he wants to.
Might give it a 5 or a 6 for me.
4.
A soft 6.
4.
I have a weird rating scale. I like everything.
I usually have a weird rating system where I like everything. Simon knows too well.
Simon's on the polar opposite. But that's okay.
That's his. He can have that. He can have that view.
Did anybody buy anything this week?
Actually, if you want, you can watch me unbox a shipment I got today.
Ooh. Yes. Oh, hang on. I just want to ask, preface everybody, was this from the Criterion Flash sale that somebody told you about?
Yes. Yes, it is.
You're welcome, Doug.
He gets to use your
product. So let me tell you guys a story. I'm, as normal, just going through Twitter because I love Twitter. And somebody had posted an image of Flash sale Criterion. So I immediately text Doug, flash sale, Criterion, ? All Doug types back to me, thank you. Never heard about it. Nothing. So if everybody's wondering why I'm laughing, this is why. Because I have no idea what Doug bought. Because he didn't ask me if I wanted anything.
How long are those flash sales? Like just a couple hours?
24 hours, generally.
Yeah, I told Doug about it because it popped up on my screen. I went, better tell Doug.
I'm going to have to do Twitter search flash sales.
Because I'm sure Doug's wife must love me when she hears, Simon, why did you tell my husband there was a Criterion flash sale?
So let's see. In this shipment, I got Iñárritu's Amoros Perros.
Good pronunciation.
Iñárritu, I haven't seen. A movie called Betty Blue.
No idea, buddy. I'm 0 for 2 now.
Okay. You might have seen this. Cronenberg's Naked Lunch.
You know what? I'm 0 for 3.
Wow. And Cronenberg's a Canadian.
I've never seen The Fly either. No, it's sitting on my shelf for 3 years right there. Copy. Never watched it. It's all right. Soon I'm going back to Daniel's favorite game. Pick a number.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we haven't done that for a couple of years.
So is this where everybody knows when I need movies to watch, I put about 40 movies on a shelf, and Daniel picks a number between 1 and 40.
Yeah, yeah. That,
and
like
that's the movie I watched that night, so I have no idea what I'm going to watch.
I think you did it for me, too, with my 2019 movies, but I think I got to Dragged Across Concrete, and I never watched it that week, and I just haven't gone back to the numbers yet.
So, Doug, so did you buy anything else? That's it? You're done?
That's it.
Topped? I have not been out, just been busy every weekend working at my second job, so watching a lot of hockey, so I have not picked up anything, but I feel I have about 150 movies on my shelf. I'm probably good for a little while, but I have been working my way through the Hellraiser sequels, and if people want to know what I think of those, you can follow us at Extra Features on Twitter, and every day there's a new tweet about another glorious Hellraiser sequel.
Extra Features PC.
Nothing for the intern. Kevin has not returned from eating pizza pockets. So I guess we have to go to the big line. Daniel, I don't think you bought anything, did you?
No, I did not.
So, Daniel, if they make it,
we fill Simon's holes.
And we're out of here.
We buy it.